Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Midpoint. We are your Mid-Florida, Mid-Week, Mid-Morning Public Affairs show, and I'm your host, Shelley Reback. We have a great show today with a wonderful panel from Floridians Protecting Freedom here. They are the group, the coalition, really, working to get protection of abortion rights into the Florida Constitution, and they are going to tell us all about where we are in that process right now. But before we get to that, a couple things of interest I want to bring to your attention. As you know, the Florida legislature has just gone back into session, and so we are in the most perilous time of the year when the legislature gets up to all kinds of misery making for Floridians, and this year is no different. For example, to make a bad situation worse, it's hard to believe, but the Republicans are now trying to roll back the very minimal but very sensible gun laws that were passed in the wake of the Parkland High School shooting. House Bill 1223 would lower the age to purchase firearms to 18, undoing one of the life-saving provisions of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Act. Lowering the age to purchase guns in Florida law would allow 18 to 20-year-olds to purchase semi-automatic weapons, such as the AR-15s and other assault weapons, and it would also allow 18 to 20-year-olds to purchase handguns from unlicensed sellers with no background check whatsoever. This is all despite the fact that 18 to 20-year-olds commit gun homicides at triple the rate of adults 21 years and older. And firearms are the leading cause of death for young people ages 18 to 20. In fact, the firearm suicide rate among this group has increased 41% in the last decade. So if this is something that concerns you, right now is the time to contact your representatives in the Florida legislature and make your feelings known. This bill is in the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee right now, and the ranking member and our local representative on that committee is Michelle Rayner. Her office number is 850-717-5062, and her office can tell you who else to reach out to on this issue. Second, there is some big news to report out of Central Florida, the Orlando area, actually Eastern Orange and Osceola counties, had a special election just yesterday for an open Florida House seat, and lo and behold, the Democrat trounced the Republican and flipped the district from red to blue. It's the first time in recent memory that a Democrat had flipped a Republican district in a special election. Yep. Democrat Tom Keene, a Navy flight officer who works in the aerospace training and simulation industry, defeated Republican Erica Booth, a teacher and a member of the Osceola School Board. The unofficial totals for the District 35 seat had Keene with 51.3% of the vote to Booth's 48.7%. Could this be a bellwether for the November elections? That's the big question, because since the Dobbs decision from the United States Supreme Court, of course, overturning Roe versus Wade, the Republicans have been struggling to get their voters to show up in election after election across the United States. It happened in Iowa at the caucus this week and in this Central Florida special election. So we are watching this very closely. Are people getting sick and tired of the chaos and the divisiveness of the Republican brand? Could be, because Keene, who made property insurance and abortion rights his key issues in the race, got between 65% to 70% of the nonpartisan or NPA, no party affiliate voters, to make up for Republicans turning out in larger numbers than the Democrats. So what actually clinched the win for Democrats in this special election in Florida was this massive margin with the NPAs and perhaps some Republican moderates as well. This is from Matt Isbell, a Democratic elections analyst. The Democrats claimed DeSantis set this election after the Iowa Republican presidential caucuses that took place on Monday, so that if Democrats flipped the seat, it would not embarrass him on the campaign trail. And as we know, DeSantis came in a very distant second to former President Donald Trump in Iowa, losing by nearly 30 points. And he trails both Trump and former South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley in polling for the New Hampshire primary on January 23rd. So, this special election in Florida was considered a test of whether Florida Democrats will be more competitive in 2024. Tom Keene, the Democrat, won with protecting abortion rights up front and center in the race. And he won with a massive turnout of NPAs, people unaffiliated with any party, and even some moderate Republicans voting for the Democrat. Which brings me right into our topic today, and that is the pending ballot measure to pass a state constitutional amendment to protect abortion rights in Florida. I say pending because whether or not this referendum actually appears on our ballots in the November election is still up in the air, and we are going to hear more about that from my guests from Floridians Protecting Freedom, which is a coalition of groups who have been working so hard to get this protection inserted into our state constitution. So let me welcome first attorney Michelle Mara Morton, who is the research manager and policy counsel for the American Civil Liberties Union Foundation of Florida. The ACLU is one of the coalition partners in Floridians Protecting Freedom and is a signatory to the legal brief that is currently before the Florida Supreme Court. Michelle is going to tell us about that court case, which is now set to be argued on February 7th. So I'm happy to have you with us on Midpoint, Michelle.
Thanks for having me.
I also want to welcome Taylor Aguilera. Taylor's a volunteer coordinator from Floridians Protecting Freedom, and she's been on the ground working on collecting enough signatures from the right places that were needed to get the referendum in front of the Florida Supreme Court. Taylor's going to tell us all about the organizing, that enormous process involved, and what the plans are for moving forward to get enough votes to turn out to pass the referendum, assuming a favorable result in the Supreme Court. So thanks for being here with us. Taylor, welcome to WMNF.
Good morning. Happy to be here.
And last but certainly not least, we have our friend of the show, Amy Weintraub, is back with us. Amy is the Reproductive Rights Program Director at Progress Florida, which is another coalition partner in Floridians Protecting Freedom. Amy's going to tell us more about the politics of the referendum and why it is so important to the November election to get it on the ballot, and what, God forbid, we can do if it is not accepted by the Florida Supreme Court. So I'm always happy to have you back with us again, Amy.
Such a pleasure to be here, Shelley.
And we are thrilled to have our Midpoint listeners back with us, too. You all make the show more interesting with your calls and comments. So join our conversation by calling us at 813-239-9663. We love having different voices on the show. You can email us at dj@wmnf.org or text us at 813-433-0885. Now, ladies, let me start with whoever wants to explain the process of putting a constitutional amendment on the ballot in Florida. How do we amend our Constitution, and how did we get to this point where we are now scheduled for an argument in front of the Florida Supreme Court on February 7th that could make or break this historic opportunity once and for all to clearly protect reproductive rights in our state constitution? So who wants to explain how we got here?
I'd be happy to.
Okay, that's Michelle from the ACLU, the attorney in the case. So tell us, how did we get here?
Sure. So in Florida, we're lucky. One of the rights that we have is that we can amend our own constitution. And to do that, citizens get together, propose an amendment, and you have to have 891,000 plus people, Florida voters, agree, sign, let's put this on the ballot. This initiative just blew it out of the water. 1.4 million Floridians signed this petition over the last 6 months, which is just unheard of. And so now we have far surpassed that requirement to get to the ballot. The next requirement is for the Florida Supreme Court to review it and make sure that it meets the requirements. Now, there's really two requirements for the amendment. It's important to keep in mind that in Florida, you have the amendment text, but you're not going to see that when you go vote. What you see is the ballot title and the summary. And so under the Florida Constitution, these citizen initiatives can only address one single topic, in this case, limiting interference with abortion. And the ballot title and summary have to fairly and accurately reflect what's in the amendment. And so now we are, you know, the Supreme Court is scheduled to hear the arguments in the case. And that is the last barrier to the ballot. Once that opinion is issued, we move forward.
And we're going to talk more about what these arguments are about in a minute. But before we get there, I want to turn to our organizers and advocates, Amy and Taylor. Taylor, maybe this is for you. But one of the requirements of obtaining those signatures is that the signatures can't just all be from the same place. So you can't, you know, plant people at very liberal urban areas in the cities of Florida and get all your signatures from those areas where you reasonably believe that you would have success in getting people who want to support abortion rights to sign the petition. No, right? You have to get a certain percentage of signatures from all the congressional districts in the state of Florida, right? Including the very rural, very conservative areas.
Well, there is a congressional district requirement. So not only do we have to get 891,523 signatures in the state, we also have to get from 50% of Florida's congressional districts, 8% of that electorate. Even saying that out loud is confusing, and it's by design. These are barriers that they try to put in place from people being able to put initiatives on the ballot. But Floridians care about abortion access. As Michelle just shared, we put 1.4 million signatures before the Department of State to verify. So people are fired up from the Panhandle to the Keys about this initiative, and we're excited to see how the Supreme Court goes and go to the next phase.
Well, I should also point out that these barriers to having citizens put their priorities in the state constitution have been increased over the last couple of decades that the Republicans have controlled the Florida legislature. These are legislators who want to make it as difficult as possible for the citizens of Florida to engage in direct democracy. Because if the legislators themselves are not doing the will of the people, then the people's only opportunity to affect the laws in the state are to bring a citizen initiative like this petition and have it placed into the Florida Constitution. And they have been making it more and more difficult over the last many election cycles that they've controlled the Florida legislature. Isn't that right? We've had greater numbers required, greater numbers of petition signers required, more onerous burdens on getting those petitions in. All of these things have worked to make direct democracy more difficult in Florida. Isn't that right?
The government is interfering not only with abortion access, but also those voting rights. Exactly what you said.
Yeah. So, all right. So how were you able to do it, Taylor? How did you do this so successfully? How did Floridians Protecting Freedom get to this point today with getting these signatures?
This was absolutely a people-powered machine. I have worked for over a decade in Florida organizing on various issues and political campaigns, and I have never seen a response quite like what I've witnessed over our signature gathering effort of people just willing to go out in extreme heat over the summer. We launched in May, and think about the record heat that we experienced this summer. We had hurricanes this summer. Despite these steep requirements, people were not fazed that we had this mountain that we had to climb. We climbed it together. So it was really inspiring to see how people were so dedicated. I mean, from the grassroots up is how this initiative got where it got with the signatures.
And did you notice, and I know, Amy, your people were out there too, working to gather signatures, Progress Florida people. And let me just reiterate that this Floridians Protecting Freedom is a coalition. It's not one single organization. It's a coalition of a number of organizations, all of whom worked to get this petition signed, to get the number of signatures that were required, and to bring it to the voters, hopefully, in November. Let me ask both you, Amy, and Taylor, who was signing this as you were out there talking to people, trying to get their signatures on the petition? Did you notice as many NPAs, people who were not affiliated with a particular political party, not registered Democrats, coming out to help to get it on the ballot, as Tom Keene's recent election win yesterday would seem to indicate?
Oh my gosh, yes. NPAs were very enthusiastic about the petition, as were Republicans. I mean, Floridians, it doesn't matter what your political party. When people approach healthcare, they have a need, and they don't come to that provider saying, oh, I need this because I'm a Democrat or I'm a Republican. They come because, you know, they need help, and all kinds of people need access to abortions, not just liberals, not just Democrats, but everyone. And Floridians, by and large, know that a one-size-fits-all policy just simply doesn't work, that there are people are different. There are so many different reasons why pregnancies are impacted by a person's health or circumstance, and people know that Floridians deserve the chance to access the kind of care that they need.
And people want to keep this a private matter between them and their doctor and their, you know, religious advisors and their families.
And that doesn't matter if they're Republican or a Democrat.
Yeah. Okay, you're listening to WMNF Midpoint with Shelley Reback. And my guests today are here from Floridians Protecting Freedom. And we are discussing the proposed ballot referendum with a constitutional amendment to protect abortion rights in Florida. And if you have questions about this ballot initiative for our guests, you can give us a call at 813-239-9663. You can email dj@wmnf.org, or you can text us at 813-433-0885. And if you, as our WMNF listening audience, if any of you were out there getting petitions signed, and I know that you were, give us a call and tell us your experience, and let us hear from you direct from the ground about the people that you spoke to when you were out there trying to get these petitions signed, and what were their concerns, as Amy was discussing, what was important to them, and why were they signing, or why were they refusing to sign? We'd like to hear from you, so give us a call at 813-239-9663. All right, let me turn to Michelle Morton, attorney for the ACLU, to explain the case that's now pending before the Florida Supreme Court, and I understand that there's going to be an argument on that case on February 7th. So what are we going to hear on February 7th? What's this dispute all about?
Yeah, so this is a voting rights case. So it's before the court is the decision of whether or not this amendment meets the requirements to go to the ballot. It's not about the justice's views on abortion. It's not about the merits of the policy. It's just about whether the amendment meets the requirements to go to the people.
Let me stop you right there. What you just said, that's what you'd like it to be about, right? That's what the proponents of the amendment would like to see the argument focused on, that it's just about whether it meets the requirements for the ballot. That may or may not necessarily be what the justices of the Florida Supreme Court want to treat it as, right?
Well, the justices are judges, they're people, and so they bring all of that with them. But the case law in this is very clear that this is a very clear, limited inquiry. So it's a question of whether this ballot amendment has a single subject, which of course it does, limiting government interference with abortion. Can't get much more singular than that.
Right.
And then
So that one, is that requirement something that the Attorney General of the state of Florida is actually challenging, or has that one pretty much been conceded?
The Attorney General did not make significant arguments on single subject. Some of the other opponents in the case did, but the Attorney General did not spend much time on that.
Let's back up. Who are the opponents in the case?
So in this type of case, anyone who opposes the initiative can file briefs in opposition, just like anyone in support can file briefs in support. And so on the opposition side, you have the usual suspects, Susan B. Anthony, the Liberty Council.
These are conservative legal advocacy organizations.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So some of them.
And are they there as amicus on it, or are they there as like direct parties to the litigation? Like friends of the court, or do they claim an interest in whether it gets on the ballot?
It's akin to amicus. It's akin to an amicus status. That's not what they call them in this case, but it's similar. And then, of course, on the proponent side, on the supporters, we had briefs filed from Florida doctors, the ACOG, American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists. We had Florida or constitutional law professors. We had a brief filed by retired Florida elected Republicans. So lots of Florida support on the support side, the opposition, more of these, the advocacy groups that tend to come out against these sorts of policies.
There hasn't been too much fighting over whether or not it's a single subject. So that seems to be, you know, that requirement seems to be, let's just say that one's going to be met without too much argument. The one that where the rubber meets the road, the requirement is that the summary, the ballot summary, not be confusing to the voters. Is that it?
Right. So the requirement is that the ballot title and summary have to accurately reflect what's in the amendment. That there can't be a bait and switch type situation because voters only have the ballot title and summary. It has to reflect what's in the amendment. In this amendment's case, the text of the summary is actually the exact text of the amendment. The first sentence is exactly the same. The second sentence is just a plain language explanation of a cross-reference. So it couldn't more closely reflect the language in the amendment. So seeing this, what the Attorney General's arguments, they're more political than legal, full of hyperbole, rhetoric. It's more, some of the lines are in their briefs were things like, you know, this could someday possibly be misinterpreted to mean X, Y, Z, and voters wouldn't know that. But that's not the test, and no amendment could ever account for that. So we feel pretty confident that the ballot title and summary accurately reflect what's in the amendment, since they are exactly what's in the amendment.
Now, the reporting on this dispute in the Florida Supreme Court seems to indicate that the Attorney General wants to challenge the ballot amendment because it refers to not limiting abortion availability up till the time that the fetus is viable, and that there's a big fight over this word viable or viability. That seems to be where the dispute lies, according to the reporting about this. Is that accurate or not?
Well, that is one of the Attorney General's main arguments, is this idea that viability means something different from what we've all known it as for the last 50 years. The language specifically says no law shall prohibit, penalize, delay, or restrict abortion before viability or when necessary to protect the patient's health as determined by the patient's health care provider.
Okay, now wait. So in this language, there's no, like, number of weeks limitations. It doesn't, like, you know, we can't restrict abortion up until 21 weeks, which was the statutory legal, you know, at one time, the presumption, you know, of when abortion was available. And then, of course, the Florida legislature changed the law to 15 weeks. And then there's now this pending 6-week limitation that hasn't yet kicked into effect. But what I notice about this particular ballot measure or this particular proposed constitutional amendment is it doesn't have a particular timeline in it. It speaks of, you know, when a medical professional would determine viability.
Yeah, and if I could, so the statutes in Florida actually have turned on viability for quite some time until last year. And, you know, viability has been the standard, you know, under Roe in Florida for, you know, longer than I've been alive, 50 years. So that's not new. What's happened in the last year is then the 15-week ban came into effect. And the reason why viability is so important is that every pregnancy is unique. And so what viability is a healthcare determination that the fetus has developed enough, is healthy enough to survive outside the womb. Now, you can draw lines, obviously, some very early pregnancies, clearly not going to, they haven't reached viability yet.
Simply because of the age
right.
of the fetus.
Right. But there are other factors that are very important in determining viability, which is why it's always been determined by a patient's healthcare provider, because they have to see that patient, that pregnancy, to know whether or not the fetus has reached that developmental stage yet.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there could be something wrong with the fetus that could challenge the notion of viability at a particular time that otherwise might not relate to these weeks, mm-hmm. These sort of arbitrary weeks that the Florida legislature has put into effect on the legislation up to now. So, all right. Well, one of the other questions I have about this matter pending before the court is, what about the issue of the standing of the Attorney General to challenge, to even challenge a constitutional amendment ballot measure over whether, for example, the language is confusing? I mean, who's she representing, really? If the people of the state have seen fit to sign a petition with a single subject and language that they understood well enough to sign it, what business is it of hers, really, to challenge the voters' intelligence? I mean, that's kind of one of the questions I had as a former lawyer. I mean, this is an anti-democratic move by the Attorney General, who's supposed to represent the citizens and the voters of Florida.
Yeah, there's a requirement in statute for the Attorney General to notify the court that enough that it's ready for review. There's no requirement for the Attorney General to oppose an amendment. Obviously, here the Attorney General chose to and was pretty open that it was, you know, for political reasons that she does not believe people should have
abortion access.
Exactly. Right. So, but yeah, the Attorney General should be representing the people of Florida.
Right. And the people of Florida have signed up for this. You know, they want to see this. They want to have a vote on this measure. And so I wonder, is part of the court case, has there been a standing challenge to the Attorney General's, let's say, interference with the will of the people, the will of the voters who've put enough signatures before the court on this measure to go forward?
No, like I said, I mean, it's pretty clear that she can challenge, that the Attorney General has standing to challenge it. So there's no challenge to that.
Okay, but on the issue of whether she can say that the measure itself is confusing, that seems like kind of an insult to all the people who signed your petition. How many again, Taylor? Like
1.45 million people.
1.45 million Florida voters.
Florida voters.
Florida voters. Florida registered voters.
And Shelley, if I may.
Yes, please.
I will tell you that in my own interactions with literally hundreds, if not thousands, of voters over this last 6 months, I will tell you that there is not confusion about viability among Floridians. People understand what it means. It's well understood in law and in medicine and in the general public. Ashley Moody's got it way wrong here.
Yeah. And I mean, I would have to think that. I mean, when people go to sign the petition to get to that 1.5, what is it, 1.54 million?
4.5.
1.45 million Florida voters read that petition summary and signed it. And nobody didn't sign it because they thought viability was, or did they? I mean, did you ever get that kind of a response?
Well, of course. Yeah, sure. Some people are anti-abortion, and that's what they
are. Okay.
Yeah.
So they were anti-abortion, and did they pick up on that?
Occasionally.
Yeah.
But by and large, people want government out of personal health care decisions, and that's a fact, and they're willing to sign.
I mean, did people ask your petition gatherers to explain viability to them?
Occasionally, but mm-hmm. mostly no.
Mostly no, because people understand what that means.
Yes.
You know? Or if there's a question, the answer is, can this fetus survive outside the womb?
You got it.
That's it. Very simple definition of viability, right? Okay. All right. So, Michelle, if you lose in the Florida Supreme Court, there's no appeal, right? I mean, let's start with the positive. If you win, we will see this ballot measure on the ballots in November during a presidential election cycle when everybody who wants to vote is going to turn out to vote. And this will be on your ballot, and you will have the opportunity to vote yes or no. You want to see the Florida State Constitution protect abortion access clearly and without limitations other than viability, right? That's it.
Yes,
yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's it.
Now, if you aren't successful in the Florida Supreme Court, the court has the power to say, no, I don't think this ballot measure is clear and concise and accurately represents the language of the proposed amendment, and we're not going to let you put it on the ballot, right? And if you get that kind of a decision, there's no appeal, right? You can't take this, like, to the United States Supreme Court, where I'm not sure you would get a different result. But in any event, you can't go any further. This is it.
Right. This is it. There's no appeal. So they would, you know, if that was a decision they'd make, they'd be pulling it from the ballot. And so, you know.
Yeah, so that would be maybe tragic. But in the past, failed ballot measures have adopted the criticism of the Florida Supreme Court. They've changed the language of their ballot summary accordingly, and they've come back from the dead, so to speak, right? Like, they've tried again. For example, the recreational marijuana ballot measure is an example of that, right? It failed the first time around at the Florida Supreme Court. The sponsors took the court's criticism of the ballot language, and they rewrote the ballot question in light of that criticism. They had to raise money all over again to obtain enough signatures for the new ballot language to bring it back. And now it looks like recreational marijuana, legalization of marijuana in Florida, will be on the November ballot, right?
Well, it's in the same posture. So it's before the court right now as well. But yes, you know, there's nothing stopping any, you know, there's nothing stopping the initiative from coming back, making changes, depending on what the court does. But right now we're really focused on defending this language and getting it to November.
Okay, so let's go back to that language. This time the Attorney General's argument is that the term viability is basically confusing to voters, and therefore they shouldn't be permitted to vote on putting that term into the Constitution. And your position is that it isn't confusing. So how can you prove a negative like that? Confusing to whom? The stupidest Floridian or the average Floridian? And God knows, who is the average Floridian today? The little Jewish retired old lady from Miami Beach, or the MAGA warrior from Bradenton, or the Puerto Rican from Central Florida? I mean, is there such a thing as the average Floridian? I mean, what's the standard for that kind of analysis of whether the ballot language accurately represents, you know, what you're trying to propose?
Usually the court looks at the language, and they look at dictionaries, you know, the law right now today. You pick up any lay dictionary, it's going to define viability the same way. In Florida statute, it defines viability the same way. That's current Florida's law.
But isn't the question not what the definition is, but what people understand it is?
Right. But the court has often looked at dictionaries to see what is the general understanding of this. And so, you know, if you pull out your Webster's dictionary and it tells you viability is when a fetus can survive outside the womb, that's what the general understanding of viability is. And so everything we've looked at of how viability could possibly be defined, that's consistent. And so that's what we expect the court to do. That's what they've done in countless other cases, is look at the plain language, look at the dictionaries, look at, you know, the plain usage of language. The other thing is that just the language itself, it says that you can't interfere with abortion before viability. Now, that implies a time period. Mm-hmm. The Attorney General's alternative meaning for viability is more of a binary thing of whether or not a pregnancy is viable, whether or not, if a pregnancy isn't doomed. There's no period before which a pregnancy would be doomed. So just the plain language itself speaks to this, that there's only real one way to interpret viability here, which is the way it's been interpreted consistently for generations. Mm.
So you're feeling pretty good about it. Let me take a call. I've got Beth on the air. Beth is calling in from Fired Up Pinellas and has also been very involved with this issue. Welcome to Midpoint, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
It's actually Indivisible Pro-Choice Pinellas.
Okay, so Indivisible Pro-Choice Pinellas.
Yes, how are you? And I am familiar with Amy, who was on your panel.
Hi, Beth.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
So again, you know, it was interesting as I was listening to you, you were talking about the wide range of Floridians who have signed this ballot. And I want to also, I don't know if this has been mentioned before, but you know what? Just as many Republicans as Democrats signed that ballot petition.
Now, you were out on the ground getting signatures, right?
I also was out on the ground getting signatures for this. And what I've realized is that everyone knows a woman or someone with a uterus. Right? And this is a nonpartisan issue. We have seen it time and time again, even in red states. People want to control their own bodies. And there is a rising backlash. It's like the dog who caught the car and now doesn't know what to do with it. Because, yes, they have been pushing the forced birth movement, the anti-abortion movement has been pushing for these laws for decades and decades. And now that they've finally gotten it, people have woken up and said, oh, no. We need to control our own bodies. And this backlash is happening.
And we've seen that around the country, haven't we? I mean, since Roe versus Wade was overturned by the Florida Supreme Court, in all of these elections where abortion was on the ballot in one form or another, either because candidates put it forward as a centerpiece of their campaign, or because there was a ballot measure. In each of these cases around the country, people have turned out in favor of more abortion access. We've seen it in Kansas, a very conservative state. We saw it yesterday in Central Florida in the special election for House District 35. We've seen it in Iowa, where people, you know, Republicans just were not turning out in the numbers that were expected to vote for these candidates that were against abortion access. So, yeah.
I think it's so important that we finally stand up and say, this is not going to work in our communities, and we're going to support pregnant people who need access to health care, abortion health care. I do clinic defense weekly, and we have two clinics that we work with who actually asked for us to be out there, both as a method of pushing these people back. But what I found time and time again is they have spent years, you know, harassing women as they're accessing health care without any pushback. And the moment that you go out there and you say, okay, we're going to play this game, right? You're going to exercise your First Amendment rights. So are we. You're here to make women uncomfortable. Well, guess what? We're not going to make it comfortable for you to be out here.
Mm-hmm.
And they back off. They go away.
Mm-hmm.
To that point, I'm actually hosting a counter march to the March for Life, and I say that in quotes, on Saturday, starting in Pioneer Park from 9 to 11. Because, again, they're going to march, we're going to march.
Okay. Thanks for bringing that up. Okay, so a counter march to the anti-abortion movement's March for Life, quote-unquote, a counter march. Yeah. Pioneer Park from, what'd you say, 9 to 11?
9 a.m. to 11.
On Saturday?
By the March for Life, so we will have our own safety marshals there. Again, this is a non-confrontational, but we intend to march with them, with our signs, with our pro-choice gear, with our chants, just as much as they're marching with theirs. So let them know that we are not going down without a fight, right? That there are just as many people in this state that want to keep bodily autonomy and want pregnant people to make those decisions with their doctors based on their personal needs, not to have the government or the state make that decision for them based on someone else's religious beliefs.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for calling in, Beth, and thanks for that information about Saturday's event. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. So, Amy, and Taylor, where do we go from here? There are two roads before us. One, the language passes the court and it's on the ballot in November. Two, it fails at the Supreme Court, and then what? Let's start with the positive. Assume it is on the ballot. What do you think the Republicans' message against it will be? The political, you know, message. What do you think their message will be, and what is your rebuttal? I think we heard some of that from Beth on the phone, but, you know, you and Taylor, you're the organizers, the advocates, and how will you get out the vote around this issue if it's on the ballot? You'll need volunteers, you'll need door knockers, phone bankers, and donations, I assume, to fund the Get Out the Vote campaign, won't you?
Yes, absolutely. So we are gearing up for November the same way that our legal team is gearing up. So is our organizing team. So we have our sights set. We are ready to knock every door. We are ready to call every voter to make sure that voters get a chance to vote and that we are successful. We're not naive. We know we have opposition. We know that they'll be out there. But, you know, we are going to continue to stay focused and center patients who are at the crosshairs of this 15-week ban and the pending 6-week ban. Because at the end of the day, we're not here to play politics. We're here to help the 82,000 patients that receive abortion care annually in Florida.
Mm-hmm. Wow. All right. So there's no, like, take a breather. There's no, like,
we're still going. We took a little 2-week break at Christmas and New Year's, and
we are back.
We have a weekend of action this weekend. It's kind of extended to Monday because Monday is the anniversary of Roe versus Wade. But we have teams that are going to be out this weekend, out in the community, helping folks get ready for the November election.
Now, assume it isn't on the ballot. You know, Democrats are really counting on this ballot measure and the legalization of recreational marijuana ballot measure to turn out voters for Democrats. Tom Keene's election seems to indicate that it is a real game changer to have abortion rights front and center in a campaign. So what happens if it doesn't get on the ballot? Amy, let me turn to you. Can Democrats still use it as an issue to rally voters around politically, and how will they do that?
Well, abortion is an important issue for Democratic candidates. There's no denying that. And if we don't make it onto the ballot, we're going to need people willing to defend abortion rights in the legislature and at all levels of government more than ever. And so certainly the electorate who care about this issue are going to need to look very carefully at the candidate's stance on reproductive freedom and whether or not the candidate's values are in line with theirs. And so certainly it will be an issue, you know, in November, no matter what.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mean, it's still possible to use it as a rallying cry to turn out voters, you know, who are going to be outraged, I think, at the Florida Supreme Court's, what I would see as an anti-democratic move to keep this question away from the voters. I mean,
that's right.
That seems to me to be a good, you know, sort of rallying point for the Democrats.
That's right, because who are these justices? They're justices that were appointed by an anti-abortion governor, the majority of them, I mean. And so, yeah.
Yeah. All right. I've got a couple calls. I'm going to ask you to make it quick because you all call in right at the end of the show. But I have Lonnie in Gulfport on the air. Lonnie?
Hi. Well, I'm glad that you're finally talking now about the elections. And it's very critical that the legislature have people in it that are pro-abortion. That can't be stressed enough. No matter the outcome of how this amendment goes, we need to have the right people in the legislature. And thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Lonnie. Well, that's certainly true. I mean, really. You want to change the way the state is run, you have to change the people running it. I mean, that is fundamentally, I mean, certainly there's an opportunity with this abortion constitutional amendment on the ballot to change that particular issue. But things like the fact that we are seeing people try to repeal these sensible gun laws that were passed after Parkland, you know, environmental issues, the notion that we can have kids working, you know, the child labor protection laws are in danger in Florida. I mean, all of these things. If you want to change the way Florida is being run, you need to change the people who are making these laws. So I have Steve in Largo. Steve, make it quick. You're on the air.
Yeah, all I can say is that the people who are against women's reproductive freedom, if you look at their lives, you will see that it can't be a legitimate sincere love of babies and life itself, because in their lives, I do not see any extra generosity or care for anyone. And so it's not about babies.
Yeah, it's not about being pro-life. I mean, these are the people, the Republican supermajority in the Florida legislature, the Republican governor. These are the people who are turning away free federal money to feed school children in the summer when school is out. There's funds available to make food programs available because we have so much food insecurity in this state,
right.
And they are turning that away. If they were truly pro-life, would they be turning that away?
No, that's exactly right. So it's not about babies. It's about controlling women and making them victims of biology, and that is such slavery, and I'm glad that your show is on the air, and thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Thanks for calling in, Steve from Largo. We appreciate your comments. All right, we've got just a little bit of time left. If you want to give us a call at 813-239-9663 with your comments on this issue, please do. But, you know, we are getting to the end of the time that we have to focus on this. I want to make sure that I've covered everything that my guests, you know, think is important for our listeners to know. So let me turn to you and say, you know, Amy, I know that there are a number of events happening this weekend. Beth brought up one of them, this counter march to the so-called March for Life that the anti-abortion forces are marshaling on Saturday from 9 to 11 at Pioneer Park. What else do we have going on this weekend?
Absolutely. It is the anniversary of the Roe v. Wade decision. And even though Roe was overturned, the fact is it was a critical piece of law for almost five decades, and it's one that we still want to lift up and celebrate as we discuss reproductive freedom. And so there are events happening on Saturday in Gulfport at 1 o'clock, Tampa on Sunday at 2, and St. Pete on Monday at noon. Monday is the actual anniversary. And as Taylor mentioned earlier...
What are those events?
They are Roe v. Wade commemoration events. So they are going to be create visibility and bring together supporters to learn what our next steps are in this ballot initiative campaign, and have information and education available, as well as rallying and like really just showing the public that we believe in reproductive freedom and we believe in the ballot initiative.
And maybe getting some volunteers, Taylor,
absolutely,
right, for the next stage of the campaign?
Absolutely. Our volunteers are going to be at these events helping folks register for vote by mail and preparing for that November election.
Yeah, that's another important point. If you have not checked with your supervisor of elections about the status of your vote by mail request, do not delay. Do it now, because one of the other measures that our Republican supermajority legislature passed is to void your vote by mail request after the last election. So unless you renew it, you specifically renew it either by going online or calling or going into your supervisor of elections office, unless you specifically renew your vote by mail preference, you're not going to be receiving a ballot in the mail. And you will be very surprised and shocked when the time passes for you to vote that you have not received your ballot. So please check with the status of your vote by mail request with your local supervisor of elections office, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay. So did we cover all the events, Amy?
We did, but I want to mention that if anyone wants details, like locations, they can go to floridareprofreedom.org. That's floridareprofreedom.org.
All right, floridareprofreedom.org. And I do have an email here from Wendy who wants me to reiterate the House bill that is now in the Criminal Justice Committee that seeks to remove those sensible gun law protections that were passed after the Parkland shooting, such as lowering the age to purchase guns in Florida to 18, and how you can get in touch with the House Criminal Justice Subcommittee to register your views on them trying to repeal those sensible gun laws. And as I mentioned, the House bill is 1223, and the ranking member on the Criminal Justice Committee, locally at least, is Michelle Rayner, and her office number is 850-717-5062, and her office can tell you who else to reach out to who's on that Criminal Justice Subcommittee. So, you know, that's about it for us today, friends. I want to thank my guests from Floridians Protecting Freedom who have worked so hard to get a constitutional amendment protecting abortion rights on your ballot in November. And, you know, whether you're pro the amendment or you're con the amendment, I think we all need to be grateful and thankful and respect the efforts of the organizers who worked so hard to collect this this petition, because, you know, really what you were doing is just giving an opportunity to the voters of Florida to make their voices heard. You know, even if you vote against it, at least you are participating in democracy, and you have the opportunity to do that because these organizers worked their butts off to make it so. And so I just want to say thank you. And I think all of the listeners of Midpoint and WMNF probably feel the same gratitude for those efforts. So as to the Florida Supreme Court argument on February 7th, I believe you can watch and listen to the argument. You can watch and listen to it live on Facebook, on YouTube. It's going to be streaming on the Florida television channel. And you can find all the details about how to access this argument on the Florida Supreme Court website. It'll give you the time. It'll give you the streaming information, the audio information. And so, you know, you as a Florida voter, you can listen to this argument and you can judge for yourself the pros and cons being presented to the Florida Supreme Court. And I would encourage all of you to do that. So many thanks to Michelle Morton Mara from the ACLU, Amy Weintraub from Progress Florida, and Taylor Aguilera from Floridians Protecting Freedom for being with us on Midpoint today to fill us in on the court case and the campaign to get abortion rights on the November ballot. And as we've seen from yesterday's special election, when abortion is on the ballot, it can be a real game changer in an election in terms of getting out the vote, all the votes. From all the parties and even the non-parties. So thanks also to our WMNF volunteers who run the show in the background.